This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. For a man usually pretty savvy about these kinds of things, the filmmaker Errol Morris's timing for his latest documentary was terrible. It wasn't necessarily his fault, but maybe he should have known it might be too soon for a feature-length profile of Steve Bannon, the man behind the election of Donald Trump. And a lot of people are still smarting about that election, of course. The documentary is called American Dharma, and it's not the first time Morris has tried to penetrate the persona of men who played questionable roles in historical moments. The Fog of War, his film about Robert McNamara, one of the architects of the conflict in Vietnam, is the perfect example. But this latest documentary seems to have gotten caught in a wave, a moment of resistance. It premiered at film festivals right around the time The New Yorker disinvited Bannon from their own yearly festival. And so all of this has now come to be part of the story of the documentary. The questions of whether he should have made it at all, whether he unmasked Bannon's inflammatory ideas or just got suckered into providing a legitimate platform for them. And we'll let you decide about that when we screen the film next week. This is part of our documentary series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Today in the program, we're talking about Errol Morris's larger body of work and where his portrait of Steve Bannon fits in all of that. Joining us on the program today is David Risha. He's an associate professor of film studies at Oxford College at Emory University. Risha studies Morris's films. He writes about them. In a book, he describes his first experience with Morris. It was watching his documentary, The Thin Blue Line. This was made in 1988, and it explored the murder of a police officer in Dallas and the case of the man falsely accused of killing him. Risha says when he saw The Thin Blue Line, it was unlike anything he had ever seen.
I wasn't taking film classes at the time, but I was getting my friend's syllabi and watching all the movies that they were watching. And so I got a VHS tape of it and watched it in my dorm room. And first of all, it looked nothing like anything I'd ever seen. It just, you know, I'd seen films with documentaries with reenactments in it before, but they looked like fiction films in terms of just how visually sophisticated they were. And that was just really impressive. But even more than that, it's a documentary about the murder of a Dallas police officer and, you know, trying to find out what happened. But it wasn't just about who killed the police officer. It seemed to be about lots more than that. And at the time, that really intrigued me. It's like, what else is going on? Like, that's just so abnormal for, you know, a crime documentary to be primarily interested in stuff other than the crime.
Yeah.
So that just really pulled me into Morris's movies, and I just tried to watch everything I could after that.
Here's the thing that interests me about that experience for you. You say in your book that you could not get to the bottom of what it was that was moving you about Morris's work. You said he wasn't trying to preach. He wasn't necessarily trying to teach. He was doing something else.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's more of an open exploration of his interview subjects. He's not just trying to find out what happened, but also why it happened in a very deeply personal way. He's trying to get inside people's minds and try to understand, you know, how they understand themselves, how they look at the world, how they understand the world. And as a question for a documentary filmmaker, that's pretty extraordinary, because that's a very difficult thing to do. And he brings in all these really inventive strategies to try to not only investigate it, but kind of visualize it.
You describe it as reflexive documentary style.
Yeah, I think that there's something reflexive about Morris's work for sure, in the way that I think it does make us more aware of the medium, but also it is kind of a real investigation into the world, but oftentimes into the subjective world for his interview subjects.
So let's talk about this latest film, American Dharma. And maybe we should start with the setting itself, because basically what Errol Morris has done here is he's built a film set from a film that was really influential in Steve Bannon's worldview. And you say this is very much a part of Morris's creative approach, these kind of stylized visuals, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, his visual style is almost antithetical to the verite, put a camera on your shoulder and follow people around and having a sense of kind of realism. And I think there's – his films are – highly stylized to the point of being, kind of hypnotically so. And I think, again, that connects to this idea of he's not just interested in what happened. He's interested in, you know, how people understand themselves in the world. And for Bannon, it's peculiar and it's not connected oftentimes to how we're understanding him. So I think by recreating – by making these fictional movies so much a part of the film, he's really highlighting Bannon's own self-understanding and this kind of fantastical notions about himself that seem oftentimes disconnected from reality.
He – Morris draws Bannon out by discussing some of his favorite movies and Bannon's favorite movies. And the one that's sort of at the center of the documentary is a film from 1949 called 12 O'Clock High. Say something about just this as a setup for what Morris is trying to get out of – or what we think Morris is trying to get out of Steve Bannon.
Yeah, it's a strategy that actually dates back to The Thin Blue Line. A number of his subjects talk about movies, most famously Emily Miller, one of the very unreliable witnesses that fingers the wrong person.
Yeah.
And she talks about her love of the old Boston Blackie serials and how she always wanted to be a detective and wanted to be the, you know, the girl Friday that helped out the detective. And now she, you know, now in her life, she sees crimes all around her. And during the movie, Morris cuts to these, you know, pretty cheesy old Boston Blackie clips. And it really helps illustrate her own fantasies, her own kind of self-deception that's really at the heart of how she, steered that court case in the wrong direction. And I think that he's up to something similar here. You know, he's asking Steve Bannon about, you know, what kind of movies he loves, who he identifies with. And that really does give us insight into how Steve Bannon sees himself.
Explain, just so people get a sense, what is the – we'll play a clip here in a moment, but what is the essence of the – what is the plot, I guess, of this 1949 film that Steve Bannon is so interested in?
It's about Gregory Peck plays a character where he's leading a group of men in World War II, and he essentially tells them to forget about survival.
I've been sent down here to take over what has come to be known as a hard luck group. Well, I don't believe in hard luck. So we're going to find out what the trouble is. We're going back to fundamentals. And I can tell you now one reason I think you've been having hard luck. I saw it in your faces last night. I can see it there now. You've been looking at a lot of air lately. You think you ought to have a rest. In short, you're sorry for yourselves. Now, I don't have a lot of patience with this what are we fighting for stuff. We're in a war, a shooting war. We've got to fight. And some of us have got to die. I'm not trying to tell you not to be afraid. Fear is normal. But stop worrying about it and about yourselves. Stop making plans. Forget about going home. Consider yourselves already dead.
Bannon finds something really intriguing about this, something that he connects to this notion of dharma that he defines over and over again as duty, fate, and destiny. And it's this kind of this sense of you just have to go in and do something, and almost like a kamikaze pilot, just kind of you go in, and even if it's the result is destruction, you just have to throw yourself into it. Bannon's own understanding of Dharma seems to be deeply problematic as well. I'm guessing that's why it's part of the title of the movie too. But I think Bannon seems to identify himself with that kind of attitude, just going into the political world and in this kind of seek and destroy mission.
Let's play a moment from the film.
I think it's a very simple film with a very simple, powerful message that modernity is based around emotionalism, which you think is helping everybody, but in fact is not allowing them to fulfill their destiny, fulfill their fate, even though that fate and that destiny may be their own personal destruction.
A lot of your ideas are about tearing things down, war and destruction.
I believe that you need some fairly radical restructuring of this and rethinking of this. The permanent political class that control our country is going to stay exactly like it is until you have true disruption. It can't be a pillow fight. You need some killers. You get some killers, you're going to see some change. We all know what the problems are. Do you have the guts to do it? Trump had it, and that's why he's president of the United States.
It's interesting. What Bannon is saying, and I have to say, Morris doesn't really point this out in the film itself. He's pointed it out later. There's a little bit of irony here in Steve Bannon's disdain for the elites as someone who comes from the establishment, who went to Harvard Business School, yet he maintains he's a populist. And I'm wondering, does that seem obvious to the audience, to the viewer, or is that kind of an odd point in the film?
I think Morris wants to highlight it, for sure. I mean, I think that's why he takes some time going back into his past, I think, because to really highlight that irony.
Yeah.
And the matching irony, well, the kind of parallel irony, is that Bannon talks about wanting to destroy, you know, the existing power structure in order to, you know, save the regular man. Mm-hmm. But he's just destroying everything. He thinks he's destroying one thing when really it's all coming down. And Morris's visuals of destruction, things catching on fire, and finally the entire set being destroyed, I think really wants to highlight the distance between what Bannon thinks he's doing and what he's actually doing.
Yeah. I want to come back to that, actually. I wonder for you, did you see – were there any moments of revelation? I thought there was an interesting moment I actually want to play, and it's where you see Steve Bannon's kind of disdain for globalization, and this is revealed in this moment for Bannon. It's an impactful story from, I think it was from 2008, and his daughter is on the volleyball team at West Point. Here's another moment.
It's a tough story to tell. The West Point girls volleyball team is going to get new uniforms. And they bring the uniforms in boxes off to the side, and the girls are practicing in this huge old dirigible hangar where the volleyball team plays from the 1920s. Looking at this, look at the West Point girls, and I look over the boxes. I just kind of go over and look at the new uniforms. They're sealed. Made in Vietnam. Made in Vietnam. I lost it. Made in Vietnam. 50,000 dead, you know, 100,000 wounded, families torn apart, the whole Southeast Asian with 10, 20, 30 million people murdered, right? What was it all for? What was Monahan's kid? What was that for? Made in Vietnam. With all the jobs lost, the globalization. It was an incredibly clarifying moment for me.
David Risha, what did you make of that moment? It seems like it was Bannon revealing himself, but then again, maybe not. Maybe it was Morris revealing something else about Bannon. You know what I mean?
I do. This is one of the most, I think, powerful moments in the film, maybe for unexpected reasons. I think this is one of the most humanizing moments for Bannon. Mm. And I think this is why, one of the reasons why people reacted so strongly and oftentimes poorly to it. First of all, in many people's minds, Bannon starts at such a kind of monstrous character that it doesn't take much to humanize him.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's a moment where I think I and a lot of people watching the movie momentarily agree with him. You know, he talks about his admiration for Morris's earlier film, Fog of War, which was critical of what we did in Vietnam. And it's funny because that moment where he's asking good questions about, you know, what was all that death and destruction for, is followed with, it seems like he's taking the wrong lesson from that observation. He starts with that, and then he goes to some pretty out there ideas about globalization. And again, it's this push and pull where there's moments you're drawn into Bannon and then almost immediately kind of repulsed by him.
What do you make of the reaction to the film? I mean, it was difficult for Morris, he's talked about this, to get a distributor. It took him almost a year, I think. This, of course, aligned with what was going on at the New Yorker Festival Ideas, where Steve Bannon had to be disinvited from that festival because there was a lot of outrage over him being involved at all. What do you make of the reaction to it and I guess the timing of it?
Yeah, I mean, reading some of the reviews, it seems like there were a few reasons why there was a strong reaction against the movie, but most of them are that Morris wasn't hard enough on Bannon.
Yeah.
Variety called it the movie a toothless bromance,
right.
Which seems it didn't strike me that way. But I think it's kind of a nice tagline for some of those responses. You know, I think that if the film's premiere didn't overlap with Bannon getting disinvited, I think that it would still have problems finding a distributor.
Yeah.
Morris has had some problems in the past, his more recent movies, finding distributors. This is the hardest I think it's been for him. But if you look at films, especially profile films in the documentary landscape right now that are big, mm-hmm. you know, you're thinking about like RBG about Ruth Bader Ginsburg mm-hmm. or Fred Rogers. These are cultural heroes. Morris has made the anti-Fred Rogers movie.
Yeah.
And I just think that you could understand why a distributor, even if they like the movie, how they could not think it would sell well, particularly at this moment.
I think it's interesting, and we should talk about this, not as a way of justifying what Morris created here, but just as a way of understanding something that you've pointed out, that Errol Morris doesn't really do exposés. That's not his style. That's not what he's interested in when he does a documentary.
Yeah, exactly right. I think that Morris kind of starts this making documentaries about these kinds of characters back when he makes a movie called Mr. Death. And it's about a guy named Fred Lucher who is an expert in execution equipment and then becomes involved in Holocaust denial. And Morris is fascinated by this. And he makes a movie that could have easily fallen into you are bad because you're now attached to these groups that are involved in, you know, one of the most disgusting things you could believe in at the moment. But instead, it's actually a nuanced exploration of certainly Fred Lucher's mistakes, but also like an open curiosity about them. And I think that that's one thing that Morris brings to all of his subjects, even some of the most disturbing ones, where he just seems curious. Morris is clearly at times disturbed by Bannon, and he says so in the movie. He calls him scary. His idea is scary. He disagrees. And something that he really hadn't done up to this point is being kind of an active antagonist in his movies. But I just think that he's not – him making a movie about Steve Bannon believing in disgusting ideas would be a no-duh documentary. I don't think that would be interesting to Morris because it's something that we already know. So I think he wanted to ask kind of harder questions about Bannon and this moment in time.
Here's another moment from the film.
But what good does it do to throw all of the DACA people out of America? What good does it do to allow corporations to pollute the environment? Is this populism? Or is this something much uglier?
Uglier being what?
Serving big business and the rich. It's anti-populism. That's what bothers me. That's what makes me think you're crazy.
And why?
Why? Because I think there's an inherent contradiction in the views that you hold. Do you just want to destroy everything?
That's a moment of... That's a kind of an intense moment. And I wonder, is it typical of Morris's film? I mean, you see in Fog of War him pushing back at Robert McNamara and his ideas. Are you seeing a similar kind of thing, or is there something maybe different here, maybe even more personal here?
This seems very different from anything I've seen in any Earl Morris movie. Yeah. For the first half of his career, he was silent. He never heard anything. It was just people talking to the camera. And his voice starts to emerge a little bit over time, but in a way that that tends to be more just kind of questioning. At times, you're right. In Fog of War, he tends to be a little kind of disagreeing a little bit, but he really gives McNamara the reins, yeah, at least when you're watching a movie. Here, he does something different. He really starts to push back on Bannon in a way that Bannon starts to question him, because it's clear that Bannon is – He tells Errol Morris that he's surprised that he voted for Hillary Clinton, and it seems like he seems to be misunderstanding this scenario. And those are some really interesting moments where Bannon doesn't answer the questions. Sometimes he's silent and just kind of stares at Morris. Sometimes he asks Morris's question, kind of like they're sizing each other up. And I think this is one of the reasons why Morris was surprised at the reaction to his movie, because I think for him, like in the context of his career, he makes a real effort to question and disagree with Bannon and express his own attitudes. But I just don't think for at least the film reviewers, they felt like that was enough.
That's David Risha. He's an associate professor of film studies at Oxford College of Emory University, author of the book The Cinema of Errol Morris. We're going to be screening Errol Morris's latest film, American Dharma, next Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. You can go to our website, radiowest.org, for more information. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West.
KUER is a resource for our community, not just to inform, but to inspire our listeners, too.
If it hadn't been for public radio playing that piece that talked about diaper banks in America, I would have never gotten involved and founded the Utah Diaper Bank.
When you donate to KUER, you can support the distribution of diapers across the state, thanks to the Utah Diaper Bank. Just choose our social good partner as your thank you gift when you give at KUER.org.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're continuing our film series, this time with a documentary almost as controversial as the subject of the documentary. Errol Morris's latest film portrait is of former Trump campaign strategist Steve Bannon. It's called American Dharma. And some are wondering if Morris revealed Bannon's true character in the film or just gave him a platform. And we're going to let you decide about all of that. We'll be screening the film next week. We'll give you details about that a little bit later on the show. We're joined by David Risha. He's an associate professor of film studies at Oxford College of Emory University. One of the things you've said is that there's a theme in Errol Morris's work, and it's human subjectivity. And I wanted you to explain this to me. Explain what you meant when you wrote that his films are largely open voice films.
Yeah. His movies from the very beginning aren't just interested in what happened in the world. I mean, they're documentaries. They're interested in real people and real events. But he's deeply, centrally, foundationally interested in why people believe the things that they do. And I think Morris's real contribution, I mean, that isn't all that unusual in the sense that documentary filmmakers, you know, if they're doing interviews or asking questions and you're getting information about people. But Morris is willing to be critical about those things in a way where he highlights people's own limited judgments, their own self-deceptions, their own delusions, their own fantasies. He's almost kind of like a documentary psychologist. He wants to get as deep as possible, and that's what is really kind of new and refreshing to me. And from subject to subject, you have all of these different kinds of people, and you're kind of doing a deep dive into their psyche. And he's finding ways kind of visually and through the sound design to really highlight those oftentimes limitations of not only his interview subjects' perspective on the world, but really something that seems much more human. Like it's part of all of us to have these limitations and delusions.
We were saying this before, but when he profiled Robert McNamara, Vietnam was long gone, at least as an issue in the country, almost 25 years. But this portrait of Steve Bannon that he's offering is just a couple of years after the election, and it's still very raw for people. And I'm guessing that may explain some of the reaction to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think people are in the mood to learn about Steve Bannon at the moment. At least, you know, the documentary audience, Errol Morris's audience. I think right now they want vengeance. They want to see a takedown, and I can understand that. And I've even found myself at times, you know, wanting a little bit more of that from Morris, more of that pushback, because I wanted like a catharsis because of all the stuff that Steve Bannon has not only said, but what he's actively working towards. We feel it's antithetical to, you know, what America at least strives to be. It just seems to be, you know, very immediate and deeply disturbing at the moment. Mm-hmm. I also think that Steve Bannon doesn't even come close to Robert McNamara's intelligence, his capacity for, you know, self-evaluation. I mean, the two characters are just those two interview subjects are just very far apart, and at least their ability to be reflective at all.
Yeah, I there's a moment in the film that I want to play. And I'm impressed that Errol Morris actually left this moment in, because as you were saying, and this comes out in the film, some of Steve Bannon's own work was influenced by Errol Morris. I mean, he really respects Errol Morris. So at this part in the film, Bannon is talking to Morris about going to a film festival, to Telluride, actually, to see The Fog of War.
I'd gone to Telluride on and off for years. I don't even think I knew at the time that you were going to have an interview with McNamara afterwards.
I was just there to see the film. I want to at least start to produce these myself and start to make films like this. Seeing Fog of War Telluride was the inspiration. It's all you to blame.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, it's impressive that he put that in, that, you know, that Steve Bannon is saying watching The Fog of War in some ways really influenced me. And to his credit, he kept it in, you know.
He did, you know, and I think this, again, speaks to Morris's interest in self-deception and people seeing what they want to see. You know, Steve Bannon clearly misunderstood that movie. If he thought that what, you know, his filmmaking career or what he's doing politically has anything to do with that movie, so it's a really peculiar moment and a moment of intersection. But again, it just doesn't seem like if you've seen the movie, it doesn't seem like he's necessarily learning the lessons. I mean, the Fog of War is built around these lessons, and Steve Bannon seems to have learned none of them.
And it's interesting to watch. Viewers who see this film will be able to visually see Steve Bannon deflate a bit when Errol Morris not only disagrees with him, I guess that doesn't bother him as much as when he disapproves of him. Here's a moment from the film when Errol Morris is questioning Bannon about his role in one of Donald Trump's first executive orders, may have been the first, the so-called Muslim travel ban.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on. We have no choice. We have no choice.
We did want to hit on day one and just start to really flood the zone with executive orders. It now is the hour of action. The media can only handle like one thing at the time. If you're giving them five things a day, right, three of them you can kind of get through.
The idea is they go into sensory overload?
Exactly. They do.
Well, you have the chaos at the airports, people who have a legitimate purpose in this country being excluded. There's a certain kind of meanness and racism at the heart of this.
You think it's racist?
I do believe that this whole thing about walls and immigration isn't really about economic populism. I think it is about racism. Do people really think that this border wall is going to suddenly provide jobs for them? No, I think they don't like Mexicans or they don't like Arabs. Or they don't like Jews.
What did you make of the give and take there? Because just visually seeing Bannon, who's a little starstruck at the beginning, and seeing yeah. him kind of look dejected when Errol Morris doesn't come along with some of his, not his ideas necessarily, but he's not as impressed as I think Bannon is hoping he would be.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you talked about moments of revelation before, and this was one of them for me. I just always assumed that people like Steve Bannon understood how divisive they are and how strongly people are reacting against the things that they're doing. There's another moment in the film where he said it's right after the election and there was, you know, the countrywide protests in the streets. And he seems honestly shocked. It's like I thought everybody would, you know, be ready to go, be ready to work together.
Yeah.
And it just, again, it gives you a sense, you know, when I was watching the movie, I was thinking, in what world do you live in? But I think that's one of the questions of the movie, you know, like, in what world are you living in, Steve Bannon? And I think that Morris is interested in kind of exploring every corner of that world. But it really does seem disconnected from at least the world that I'm familiar with.
Mm. What do you think we really did learn about Steve Bannon's true convictions? Like for me, I'm wondering, you know, there's that big question for this film itself. Like, did Errol Morris just give a platform to a guy who has some distasteful ideas? Or did he unmask, you know, Steve Bannon in some way? Did he debunk the myth of Steve Bannon in some way? What do you think?
You know, I think the film is maybe in part about what he believes, but I think it's more interested in why he believes the things that he believes.
Yeah.
And in that way, I think that it's his that's maybe the contribution of the movie. You know, I think, you know, Steve Bannon has been on every single news program. He's been on 60 Minutes. He's been on every single, you know, cable network. He has a platform. Mm-hmm. And he's been out there. And I don't think it was kind of taking a guy who has dangerous ideas that have been hidden and giving them a platform. I think for Morris, the exploration about why Steve Bannon believes those things, Morris thinks that, just to speak for him for a second, why he thinks that's useful is because I think that if we want to make a true effort to try to fight back defeat what is a very strong movement in this country, we really need to understand it more than they are racist. It needs to be a deeper understanding than that. And I think that that's at least what Morris was trying to do with the movie, really trying to get underneath the surface level kind of disgust of the ideas to try to get to the why questions.
There's one more moment from the film I want to play because I think it's interesting. Steve Bannon says revolution is coming. He says, revolution is coming as night follows day. And one of the most kind of powerful revelations in this film doesn't come from Bannon. It comes from Errol Morris himself. Here's another moment.
I can't tell you how annoyed my son is with me for voting for Hillary in the primary.
Oh, my God, you just crushed me. How did you do that? How did you possibly vote for Hillary Clinton? I'm kind of shocked now. How could you possibly make Fog of War and how could you make what known unknowns, how could you make this and then vote for Hillary Clinton?
Because I was...
We got to swap places now.
Yeah, because I was afraid of you guys. I still am. I thought that she was the best hope of defeating Trump. And Bannon. I did it out of fear. I don't know how better to describe it.
Was he doing shtick or was he being honest there, do you think?
That seems really honest to me because it doesn't necessarily paint Morris in the best light.
Yeah.
You know, it says that he was, maybe that wasn't what he thought was best, but he was scared. I mean, he was acting emotionally. And I think that that's a moment that I think a lot of people can understand, not just with the 2016 election, but with everything that's happened. And that's happening now, certainly, as we're the Democratic Party is going through the process of picking somebody. I mean, that's still – that feeling, that emotion still looms large. You know, and Morris has called his movie a horror movie on multiple occasions. And I think that you could take that in a number of ways, but one of them is that he's really horrified at this whole moment. And it's something that a lot of us share, and it's not a catharsis for Morris, but it's really trying to come to terms with what's been happening. I just found that moment. It's so unlike Morris to do that in a documentary. It just really stuck out to me.
Back to what we were talking about earlier about you saying that. Writing about that Morris wasn't preaching or teaching. He was exploring something deeper. Do you think it could be said that he pulled that off, that he succeeded with this film, and that in some ways, because of the moment we're in, because people are wanting their pound of flesh, out of Steve Bannon. They, I don't want to necessarily put it this way, but maybe they just don't get it. Is that possible?
I do. I think that that's right. And this goes back to your early question about kind of Morris using an open voice. And, you know, a crude approximation of that, you know, in fictional movies might be the difference between, you know, The Notebook and Breathless. You know, in the Notebook, you kind of you know who are the good guys. You know what you want. I like both movies, but it's all pretty linear and controlled. Where, you know, Godard's Breathless, I don't know, should they be together? Shouldn't they be together? What's the nature of their relationship? It seems to be, you know, it's something you kind of have to work for. And I think that, you know, Morris, to a certain extent, is making, you know, art cinema documentaries, where part of the, I think, the appeal for people, but maybe also on the other part of that, part of the frustration, is that we want things nailed down in a way that Morris finds it more interesting for those connections to be more open, for us to maybe do the work or make those connections ourselves in a way that makes them more rich and textured. And I think, you know, if you want to make a documentary right now about, you know, something less, you know, controversial, that's not as problematic. But I do think that a lot of people, even if – I don't know if it's not getting the film. I mean, they might get all of the visual motifs and all the connections. It's just not what they want. They just wanted him to make a different movie, rather than taking the movie on its own terms, maybe.
This is going to sound incredibly self-serving because we're screening this film next Wednesday. But to those who are on the fence about it, like, what do you say? Like, go see it, or maybe skip this one.
Go see it for sure. I mean, it's just on its face, it's a film by one of not only the, in my personal opinion, the not only one of the great documentary filmmakers, but just one of the great filmmakers, in a film that's very hard to see at the moment. And again, I think that right now it's so easy to live in a world where it's kind of an echo chamber of information, where whatever your proclivity is, political proclivity, whatever the stuff that you want to – whatever the things that you know gets fed back to you, either in the news stations you watch or on Facebook. I think that – it's important for all of us on all parts of the political spectrum to sometimes take ourselves out of ourselves a little bit. And this isn't a movie for me where it's not some, you know, Steve Bannon hero worship, but it is different than I think a traditional filmmaker would kind of do a takedown at the knees of Steve Bannon. I think it raises some interesting and difficult questions in ways that I had never really asked myself about Steve Bannon or that movement.
David Risha, thanks a lot.
I had so much fun. Thank you.
David Risha, he's an associate professor of film studies at Oxford College of Emory University, author of the book The Cinema of Errol Morris. We're going to be screening American Dharma next Wednesday night at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center. You can get the details on our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production of KUER. You can subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. And as always, we want to hear from you. We're on Twitter, at Radio West. Thanks to our intern, Natu Twe, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard, by Ali Vallarta and Tim Slover. Christy Miners is our executive producer. I'm Doug Fabrizio.